What is up, ladies and gentlemen? There are two words we love here on the Coaches to the Moon podcast: revenue and profits. And my guest today, Damien Andrews, is an expert on how to increase both of them, because he runs a podcast called Growing Revenue and Profits. And he's a very, very knowledgeable man in the field, interviewing successful people all over the world to get their insights as well. Not only is he a podcast host, he's also a very successful businessman of his own right. He's an international speaker, consultant, advisor, and he has helped businesses big and small to massively increase not just their top line, but also their bottom line, whilst working less, which of course is the dream for all of us. So today, really, really great chat. We dig into some of his tangible sales and conversation tips, building rapport. We also dig into his history in the armed forces and how that has affected his time in business. Great chat with a really, really lovely guy. I really enjoyed this time. I think you'll enjoy it too, because Damien is a stone cold Aussie legend. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Damien Andrews on Coaches to the Moon.
This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast, ladies and gentlemen, joined today by a very new friend of mine, Mr. Damien Andrews, international speaker, CEO, founder, consultant, advisor, host of the Growing Revenue and Profits podcast, part of the Next Gen Sales and We Leadership. This is a man with all the secrets and a man who I'm very, very excited to join on my show after spending some time on his show last week. We're going to dig into what makes sales a sale, what helps businesses to grow from small to big, how do you increase your revenue and hold on to more of those profits, and Damien's story as to how he got here. So I'm really, really excited to be here with you, Damien. Thank you for rocking up, mate.
It's a pleasure, Alex, and then thank you for that. Really honored and flattered by your comments, but flattery will get you everything, so I'll open up.
Well, you're a very handsome man. You're very impeccably dressed, very good podcast host, and I'm sure, a very good cook as well. So please now tell us the secret of making money. let's start from the beginning. We spoke last week, and by the way, mate, I'm not sure if you are getting this on my screen. You're very pixelated, but don't worry about it. If I'm pixelated on your screen, it's going to be fine, because it's not recording off the stream, it's recording off the devices. So some people are concerned.
I understand.
But you're all good.
And just there's a slight little delay. I think that's what's causing a bit of issue. So for the listeners, if there is a little delay, that's what that is. Don't be too concerned. But yeah, it's from that perspective, to answer your question, I used to think I was a bit alone, because I used to think, you know, life was pretty easy. It wasn't always easy for me, but then I found some things, some principles, and life became really, really easy. And I was thinking, am I weird? Is this crazy? And then I found a quote from Confucius who said, life is really simple, but we insist on complicating it. And that then made it all clear from my perspective. Yes, you know, growing a business, having a successful relationship, all those things are very basic principles about to follow. And if we just followed them and put all the other gunk to the side, wouldn't have any issues at all. And that's how I've structured my life, and also the advice that I share with the clients that I work with. And the ones that follow it have tremendous results. And you know, from background and discussions we've had before, one of my clients, they were a small second generation engineering company. And through COVID, in 18 months, they went from an $8 million turnover business to a $25 million turnover business. And the thing was, they didn't work any harder. They actually probably worked a little bit less, but they focused on the key things that got the results. And that was the difference that made the difference. So it wasn't any harder work. And they got to 25 million and they said, that's where we want to be. And they stopped there. And they just consistently have been doing that. So for the past three, when did they finish? That was 2021-ish, end of 2021. So they've consistently maintained that $25 million since then.
That's rough and roll, man. Yeah, I read that little story on your LinkedIn page. I dipped my toe into LinkedIn very begrudgingly to do a little bit more research on Damian Andrews. I do not like the platform, but what I was very impressed by, actually, while we're on the topic, is how you managed to, you don't have millions of followers, or even, I don't think, you know, multiple thousand followers, but every piece of content you put up gets hundreds of likes and comments on it, which leads me to believe that you're absolutely right, saying that this is quite a simple game if you focus on the right things, because we're not, there's a lot of bells and whistles on social media and gaining attention. There's a lot of shiny objects. It feels like to me, you're just putting out really good value content that people are relating to. And I'd love to know that before we dig into the really big concepts of business and life, what are some of your, I suppose, secrets or habits that help you to make content so relatable and so well engaged with?
Oh, that's a good question. A very, very good question. I don't know that I really have the best answer to that. I put out things that I think are valuable, that I find valuable, that I find helpful. And I'm not thinking about, you know, is this going to be liked or is someone going to, and I'm not trying to shape it to be liked. I'm just being myself and going, this is what I have to share. And I guess that's what we termed the, I think in our this previous discussion, as authenticism, which is a word that I've made up, but I'm going to get in the dictionary. I'm determined to get in dictionary, that you embrace your authenticness, being yourself. And from a marketing perspective, that's the best position you can be in. Don't try and be like someone else. And I learned, and I can't remember why I did this, but a long time ago, you know, a lot of people talk about how they want to be like a certain mentor or a role model, or, you know, going, I want to be like Elon Musk, or I want to be like Steve Jobs, or, you know, that kind of thing. And years ago, for some reason, it switched, and I don't know why, but I just said, I want to be the best Damian Andrews. And that was it, full stop. No, you know, trying to emulate something. Yes, there is some inspiration that comes from other things, but it's my way. This is my version of that. And I think maybe that's why, is it's because it's me being me. And does everyone relate to that? No, there's a lot of, and I've had people that have contacted me and you know, they've got to know Bill, and they go, actually, I don't relate to Ego. And that's fine. You don't have to relate to what I am. We're all going to find our own way. But I guess from the people that have come and you know, reviewed my articles and things like that, they do relate to it. And that's why they leave that comment. And I think if you be yourself, you'll find people that do relate to you. Will everyone relate to you? No, but you don't need everyone to relate to you. That's not the point. It's about just being you, sharing you with the world. And the people that connect with you will then connect with something that is authentic, to use that word, and they will relate to that. You're going to get it stuck.
I completely agree. I think that's 100%. Authenticness. Yeah. It's really, really cool. Authenticism. I think you're completely right. And especially in the space of coaching, consulting, you know, this solopreneurship space where so many of our listeners, and indeed you and myself, we are the face of our own brands. And you form these long relationships with clients where you're working closely together for months at a time. You really need to be actually very, very authentic on the way in, because people will figure that out pretty quickly if you're not who you said you were on social media. Maybe you can get away with it if you're selling t-shirts or shoes or a buyer wants product. But when people are actually talking to you and spending time with you and building a relationship, definitely authenticity is huge. And I think that just that as a message for marketing is, you said it's not the best answer, but I believe it is absolutely the best answer, because there'd be so many people out there thinking, oh shit, the only way to get followers right now is to be posting on Threads every day, or to be doing dances on TikTok last year, or before that to be on Snapchat or whatever it is. And, you know, for me, probably I'd do better if I went on LinkedIn some more, but I do not like that space. So I think you're completely right, man. And I love to see it working for you. So let's scroll back a little bit, brother.
I was just going to say a tip for the people doing it as well. One of the things, and I learned this from, for those in Australia that are listening, you might have heard of a guy called Frank Walker from National Tiles. Hello, Frank Walker from National Tiles. He's a friend of mine. And I mean, when he was starting the business, and for most of the time, while he was running the business, he only ever advertised on radio. Only radio. And he said if he had more budget for advertising, it would all go into radio. And the thing was with that, because he was so focused on that, he owned that market. And as you were laughing when I did the voiceover, it became recognizable. So he wasn't trying to, again, appeal to everybody and not get a market. He appealed to a market, a solo market, and he garnered that market. And that's, I think, from that perspective, when you're trying to do everything, it's not as focused and you don't have the reach and you struggle because you're not getting that depth. Where if you pick one medium, do it really, really well. Once you've done it really, really well in that, then maybe move on to something else. But you know, again, quoting what Frank said, he said he was just getting so much return out of just doing radio. If he could do more radio and had more budget for radio, he would have done that and grew a massive business out of advertising on one medium only.
Well, it's very easy as entrepreneurial people to always want to be doing more and more before sorting out what you've got currently. That grass is always greener, shiny object kind of syndrome, that there's always going to be something better. And right now, I've got a digital marketing agency, but this guy over here, he's doing e-commerce or he's doing drop shipping or maybe I should be a speaker, the thing that we're currently doing, if we just focus on that for a little bit longer and just put a little bit more energy into systemizing that, that might allow us to go and try out other things without being at the detriment of our initial business. And one of my guests a while back who owned go ahead, Damien, go ahead.
Again, a little bit of a lag there. I thought you'd stopped. But from that perspective, and it's one thing we forget as entrepreneurs, like you say, you want to do all these different things, but we forget about how human nature works. People are creatures of habit and it takes time for that habit to form. So if you start doing something, this is where a lot of people don't succeed. They'll start doing something and they won't give their customers or potential customers the time to form that habit, to form that relationship with them. And you mentioned about next gen sales. That's part of one of the key things we talk about is you've got to form that relationship. I mean, think about how many things that you buy every day that are in your cupboard, your toothpaste, your cereal brand, all that you buy just out of habit because you don't even think about it. And when you're breaking in, want to break into a market, you've got to understand that you need to get into that, the mindset of people and break the habit of their behavior so they actually come to you. And if you're flipping around doing lots of different things, you don't get the opportunity to get that habit to form. And that's where a lot of people struggle when they start businesses or even want to go into a different area is they don't allow that time and they don't have a plan to enable that habit to form so that the customers then just come to them naturally and unconsciously.
Unconsciously is an interesting word for customer behavior. I've never really thought about that so much because I suppose that's what I do, I mentioned it before, and that as probably everyone watching knows, I went and got my beard trimmed this morning. They can all tell. But I never have to make a decision anymore about who I get to do my beard, where I book a haircut. It's just an understood thing. This is what I'm doing for my haircut. I know that if I need eggs on a Thursday morning, I'm going up to the local nursery rather than Woolies, and then I know that when my term ends with my current business coach, I will start the next one immediately. Unconscious. It's just not even like a decision I have to make, which is really, really cool. So I think that's great. So in terms of creating a customer who...
So to expand on that from that perspective of the unconscious side of things, his head goes to the microphone. It's one of those things, if you actually are very clear about what you're doing with your product and service, but you also identify what is the unconscious belief that your customers have, and this comes to really, if you take that to another level of that identification of your customer, you're creating that customer avatar, so to speak. But if you go to an unconscious level and tap into that, that's a very fast way of getting mass market adoption really, really quickly. And the example is the health food market. one of the things they tapped into was they said food doesn't taste the same as it used to. Now, that was a belief people had. And so that from that belief, they said food doesn't taste as good as it used to. Here's, you know, a natural product, which we'll add heaps and heaps of margin to and put that out there. And they got mass market adoption of that because they tapped into that unconscious belief. And if you know how to do that, you can get mass market adoption really, really quickly. And again, that's something that we focus on with growing revenue and profit, how to get that unconscious connection. But it's a unique skill, and very few marketing agencies even know how to do this. I certainly don't see it in a lot of the work they do.
What we do is, on a similar vein, a question that we always ask our clients when they come on board, and we need to form an image of their ideal customer, is we ask them, how would your ideal client complete this sentence? And it is, if only I could just. And if they can finish that sentence and they know how to finish it, then that really helps out. And that's a trick I learned from someone else. And then the next one is, what are the challenges and excuses they give for not achieving that result? And that's generally, you know, for someone in the fitness space, you mentioned health food, like if someone's trying to lose weight, then maybe the fact is that going out for lunches and networking is a big part of their career. And they can't, you know, they can't really skip fancy restaurants because they have to sit down, and or maybe they're salespeople and they're traveling, that sort of thing, or you know, whatever it is. And so if you are able to then know what sort of objections people are going to have about why they can't achieve this, or the excuses they give themselves, then you're going to be able to say, okay, here's how to go from dad bod to rad body, even if you can't skip the corporate lunches or without giving up your networking drinks, that sort of thing. And those little bits, like you said, of understanding people's unconscious beliefs, which they don't really have until you dig into them, really, really powerful. So I'm glad you brought that one up. What sort of thing with this company that you talked about, who went from 8 million to 25 million, let's take some of your lessons and see how they played out with that company who you just spoke about. What did you change in their business? Was it systemization? Was it the way they marketed to their customers? What was it that gave the biggest revenue shift and allowed them to triple their revenue in just a few months?
Yeah, that was really focusing in on understanding what the customer need is. And they were working in an engineering space, providing services to first-tier contractors like John Hollands, those kind of things, doing government, a lot of government work. And from that perspective, and I know from my own experience working in there, one of the challenges that those big companies have with contractors is actually contractors doing what they say they're going to do and meeting the compliance requirements and the safety requirements, because they're quite onerous on those big construction projects. The safety requirements are paramount. It's the first thing in any meeting, we talk about safety. And getting subcontractors to take that seriously is challenging. And as I said to them, I said, this is what we want to focus on. You want to focus on fulfilling that need, because that's their most important need. And this is where it doesn't matter whether that's in construction or whatever it is. What is the most important need that they need? And it comes back to the 80-20 rule, the Pareto principle. If you really dig into understanding what your client needs, and this comes to part of selling as well, from that perspective, to find out those needs, you're asking questions. The most powerful thing you can do as a salesperson, introverts are actually better salespeople because they will ask more questions. An extrovert will tell you how wonderful the product is, but they haven't even inquired whether the person has a need. And from that perspective, what you want to be doing is asking questions. And that was, I knew that answer because of my experience. But when I'm working with other clients, it's about finding, okay, what does that client need? What is the key drivers of the need? And that's what you tap into. And what we did from their perspective was we said, okay, safety is important. What we'll do is we'll ensure that they know we're training the people, the staff here, to those safety requirements. And a simple thing that we did on any large construction project, it's a requirement to reverse park when you come into a car park, because Fulton Hogan did a study years ago, and they found a reduced car park accidents by something like 95%. It was a ridiculously high amount. And so we got them to do that. whenever a client came in, when a government client or a big first-year contractor come in, we just point out and say, here, look, we train our people to operate in the safe manner that you require using your procedures. Notice how all the cars are reverse park, which is required on your site. So our people are doing it automatically. You don't have to train these people to come on site and do that. They're already doing it. And there was a whole bunch of systems that we had in place that they were doing. And so they'd just go, you've just made our life really, really easy because we don't have to monitor whether you're going to operate safely. This is our key priority. And from that perspective, they just won a lot of work on that basis at a decent price too. It wasn't, you know, they weren't beaten down on price because again, they knew, the big contractors knew these guys were going to operate safely and going to make their work a lot easier. And it's the same token whenever working with a client is to find out what your customers need. What is the key things that they need? And let's focus on that. Let's spend our time focusing on delivering that component rather than all these peripheral things that might not be of any value at all. And if you can tap into that, what is those key needs that they have? It just makes that process a little bit easier. But to do that, you have to ask questions. You've got to be in a position of wanting to know more.
Yeah, got it. I think that's really, once again, that little unconscious behavior of having people reverse park, changing how people perceive, you know, your company and the way you did business. Really, really cool. We try those little customer experience things that make those special touches is huge. Even something that seems as small and insignificant as that actually creates ripples about how you do business, which is lovely. I love that to bits, man. I'm learning a lot already today, and it's really interesting when we see business principles that can be effective in much bigger businesses than most coaches are running. Construction, engineering, these are usually 7-8-figure businesses, massive turnover, whereas most coaches are playing in the 5-6-figure space and then sometimes getting into 7. So it's really interesting to try and adapt an 8-figure principle into a 6-figure principle. And that's really, really fun because I believe it can be done quite easily as well when you think about it. So moving on from customer behavior, Damien, we never really got a chance to dig into you. And I've got to dig into Damien because you, in the nicest way possible, you wouldn't think it to look at you, but you were in the SAS, which of course stands for Super Army Soldiers. And I just love to know a little bit about that experience being in what is definitely regarded as one of the gnarlier, parts of the army of the defense force, and what that experience was like for you. I'm assuming as a younger man and how that's played out in the rest of your business life.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. And it was a wonderful experience, but to delve right into where that came from, when I was at school, I didn't want to be there. I like learning, but I didn't like the school structure. And my dad said I wasn't allowed to get a leave school unless I had a job. Well, a couple of weeks later, the army recruitment people came around and said, and then I went, great, I'm going to get, and I signed up to get out of school. And I'm a couple of weeks into basic training and I'm thinking, this is not so much fun. Running around the bush wasn't all that, but I was, I wanted to escape home. And at the end of basic training, you had the option of different places, different work areas where you could go to. And I knew I was mature enough to know that I wasn't mature enough to get one of the good jobs. There was engineering, signals, all those kind of jobs. There's only a couple of places and anyone else went to infantry. And so I was, again, not wanting to run around the bush anymore. There was one position no one was going for. Now, I'm a 18-year-old guy, and what does an 18-year-old guy think about? The feminine types. And I was looking at it going, there was a chef's position there, and girls like guys that can cook. And that was my first motivation. The second motivation was that it would get me out of going to infantry. And the third motivation was, it might be a career later on. So I've gone to the army school, the chef school in the army, and I'm there. And while I'm there, they said to a friend of mine who was on the course, do you want to go to Perth? And he said no, because he'd just come from Perth. And I put my hand up and said, yeah, I'll go to Perth, because again, far away from home. I just wanted to get away at that point in time. And they said, okay, if you pass the psychological test, you can go. I went, yeah, no problem. Didn't ask what it was or anything about like that. So I've gone and I've done the psych test. I passed it, jumped in my car, drove from Melbourne to Perth. So I drove across the Nullarbor and I drive into the SAS base in Perth, and that's where I was posted. So that was my journey to the, and people have said, what, are you some sort of Steven Seagal type character, you know, Under Siege, you know, because I got to do cooking and I was jumping out of aeroplanes, went down diving exercises with submarines, out on the ribs, the rigid inflatable boats, doing terrorist exercises, whole bunch of stuff. It was a ridiculous amount of things, abseiling to caves, just did all this kind of great stuff. It was a lot of fun, and it was a privilege and an honor to be able to serve the country in that way and fully understand, especially when you look at today with what's going on, how important our defense force is and how fragile our world is and our way of the world is. There's people out there, there's regimes out there that do want to take it in and will try if they can, and how important the work that our defense force and our first responders do as well. And so I'd like to give them a shout out, but how important that is. But yeah, certainly a lot of fun. Got to do a lot of things, and it was a combination of both. Very serious, but also I enjoyed it a lot.
Were you ever deployed overseas?
When I was there, there was no wars on. So when I joined, the first Iraq war had just finished. After that, there wasn't any wars on. We did do some stuff, but you know, there wasn't any wars on. So.
Okay, cool. So that's great, man. That's a really fun story. And I actually almost went into the culinary training for the army as well, for the exact same reason. When I left school, as we talked about on your show, I wanted nothing to do with it. I saw, okay, you can go to the Australian Defence Force Academy, get paid to exercise and learn how to, you know, be really cool. And but I had asthma, flat feet, and a crack in my a hairline fracture in one of my vertebrae, which I've had since I was born. So you didn't let me in. But what's really interesting, mate, is that I look at business, right? As I'm getting further into business, I find that I need to make more and more difficult decisions. And the more responsibility you take on, the more times you have to have difficult conversations and do things that make you feel uncomfortable. Now, for me, every now and then it might be something like having a tough conversation with an employee or a client, someone who's disgruntled, and that's fine. But for people who have been through much tougher trainings and regimes and been environments like terrorist training with the SAS, do you feel like that's had an effect on your ability to deal with difficult and stressful situations in business? And if that is the case, are there any lessons you could give us on how to maybe adopt some of those mindsets? What's up, guys? Alex here. If you're enjoying the episode, please don't forget to give us a subscribe on whatever channel or platform you're watching or listening to this. It really helps us to make an amazing show every week. Thank you so much. Back to the episode.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly, if you ask my dad, he would definitely say that it was 100% affected my attitude and my level of responsibility and how I approach life. And he's probably right from that perspective. And certainly if you're in business and wanting to succeed, one of the key things you have to do is have conscientiousness. You need to be able to be well organized. You need to have not only just well organized in how you operate, but well organized in your mind and how your mind operates. And you're right, you mentioned about that. All you see is CEOs having difficult conversations. A lot of the times what you're dealing with is you're dealing with people that will tell you, you know, we need to do this, we need to do that, and they haven't really looked at what they're doing and they haven't checked as to whether it's meeting the objectives. And you've got to guide that conversation back to, okay, we're moving in this direction, this is where we're heading. And then you've got to clarify for them and help them understand that what they're doing is not relevant to where you're going. Some of it might be, but most of it's not. So go back and do it again. And that takes a lot of patience, a lot of emotional maturity. And from that perspective, yeah, there was a lot of foundational work there that I developed while I was at the SAS in being in those difficult situations. And there were some very difficult situations. We're in some of the, so it wasn't deployed frontline, but we did do a number of different things. And we're in very, very challenging situations, I will say, and had to address that and deal with that. And from that perspective, it again comes back to having that focus. What is the outcome you're going to want to achieve? There's so many things coming in from left field that you've got to deal with and address and stay focused on where you're going. And it comes back to that focus. If you're going to succeed, you need to be focused on what you're doing. You need to have the belief in yourself that you can make it through. And all of those traits are things that I did get a foundation from while I was at the SAS. And in some fairly extreme situations, the principle applies in business. And it applies, and you mentioned before about big business that I've worked with and smaller solopreneurs. The principles are the same. It's more fragile for a small business because you don't have the same, in most cases, you don't have the same level of resources to be able to get through tough times. So you've really got to be on the ball. And that's where it's so much more critical to focus on those principles. And what are the key things you need to be doing and only focus on them? So that discipline is much, much more important as a smaller business than it is in a big. It's still very important as a big business, but a big business has a little bit more security in the assets that it has, the resources that it has, and the ability to move forward. Whereas a small business, in most people's situation, doesn't. They don't have a lot of assets behind them. They don't have a lot of revenue. And that can be impact very, very strongly. So yeah, conscientiousness, something that definitely learned while I was in the Special Air Service Regiment, and something that is really, really critical from operating a business.
Yeah, love that. Love that. And on something you said then, in terms of big businesses having lots of assets and resources and more wiggle room, like we certainly saw that during the, you know, initial stages of the pandemic, was people just shutting down within a week because they did not have those cash reserves, especially people in low margin businesses like hospitality, who were not able to operate. Like fine dining, people think that fine dining restaurants, because they're expensive, are making tons of money, but they're actually making less than people with, you know, bistros, because the margins are so small and they are basically just constantly reinvesting. So I'd love to know, in your experience of working with smaller and bigger businesses, obviously there is a balance between having cash reserves and wiggle room and reinvesting into the business. So for someone in the situation like me, for example, growing into that sort of high six to, you know, almost seven figure revenue, constantly reinvesting into the business. We'd love to know your thoughts on, yeah, how much to put back in and how much to save for a rainy day, so to speak.
Great question as well. And also to highlight, it's not something that's an exclusive problem to small businesses. One of the clients that I was working with was a very large company, and their goal was to get to $1 billion, so 90 turnover. And in the meetings that I was having, I said, well, what about profit? And they go, oh, no, we just want to get to the $1 billion turnover. Well, they got to the $1 billion turnover, but they lost money. They had cash reserve to float that, but they didn't focus on that. And this is where it's really important to answer your question, is when you're focusing on things, you want to be focusing on the things that are going to add money to your bottom line, not necessarily sales. So you need to be very careful with the clients that you're seeking. You want clients that are going to give you that margin. You mentioned about margin. You want the clients that can give you the best margin, because that's going to give you the security. The cash that you keep is cash that you can use to reinvest in the business. That's the surplus cash that you have. So the more of that that you have, the more you can reinvest in, or more of that opportunity you have to reinvest in the business. So part of that focus, again, coming back to, you know, life is really simple. We just insist on complicating it. A lot of times people will go out there and out of a need, or a desire, to they take every potential client without really thinking about, is this client useful for me? Another a business that I know that, and this wasn't a client, but it was a group of three guys that had a plumbing business, and they were turning over 15 mil. And they're working flat out, didn't really have a lot of time, 7 days a week, no time for their family. They actually decided they were going to get rid of all the crap clients, and they did, and their revenue dropped from $15 to $10 million. They had more time in a day. So they worked a 5-day week, normal hours, so they had time for their family. But the thing was, their profit went up. They had more money in their pocket at the end of the day. So their revenue went down, but their profit went up. And that's the two. You've got to put them in sync. When I'm investing in my business, growing my business, am I investing in the high margin areas that are going to give me the most value for the time spent? Because investing in growing your business is something out of your ordinary operation. So it takes that little bit extra time. So you want to get the maximum return on that. And that's the real key, is finding those areas where you're going to get that maximum return and having the discipline to say no. And especially if it's a difficult client, my advice is refer them to your competition. Send them off there. Let them deal with it. It's going to make your life easier.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the Pareto principle before, that 80-20 rule. There's always, in service-based businesses, you're always getting, I feel, 80% of your 20% of your clients give you 80% of the work. We're talking over each other, Damien. Sorry, it's often for me the people who are paying more, who have the bigger businesses, who are the easiest clients. They're the ones who sort out their invoice on the day, and they will take mistakes in their stride. And it's definitely people who are a little more not as used to investing in their business, that are definitely the more difficult people to deal with. Just because they're not used to it yet, not because they're not good people, but just because, they have not grown that capacity for risk and investment yet, as the bigger guys have. So I know you were going to say something there, so please go ahead.
Yeah, well, to put that in context as well as in dealing with that and that understanding of people having it, and it is a good distinction to make between people and their behaviors. You're right, some people don't have that experience and they become more difficult to deal with because they don't have that experience. And that's a choice you need to make as an operator. Do you want to deal with that? But to put that in context, in a recent episode on growing revenue and profit, I did a discussion where I was talking about a McDonald's. And the CEO of McDonald's came out, when we're in a recessive environment, a so-called recessive environment, their sales grew by 12.6%. And he said, not only that, we're accelerating the business. We're investing in our people. What they were doing is investing in new technology to free up the time of their senior managers, so the senior managers could then focus on what's happening in the market and be able to make more adjustments to adapt to the market. And so that's when you think about it, when you're operating a business, these are the people you're competing against. So if you're fluffing around with stuff that's causing you strife and not enabling you to focus, you're competing against someone like McDonald's. Whatever your industry is, there's bigger players in there, and their focus is on accelerating the business, investing in their people, investing in those quality areas. And that's where, from that perspective, not only are you more fragile because you're smaller, but you've got these people with all this experience competing against you and wanting the same market. So you really need to be on the ball and go, okay, what am I doing? Be very, very clear about that. And that's where you come back to that whole principle. Life is simple. If you're not clear about it, then you're not making your life simple. You need to be clear, go after this market, do what Frank Walker did, focus solely on radio. I'm not saying you should focus on radio, but pick your medium. Like you said, you don't like LinkedIn, you don't go there. And that's why we don't hang out very often. But I don't go to LinkedIn that often either. I just post there. I'm not there constantly on there chatting with people. The other thing that you can do with these sort of things is be smart about it too. I mean, how often do you get people contacting you, giving you an offer and saying, come and help your business, or I can help your business, or whatever it is. You get these promotional things from people cold emailing you, cold calling, whatever you want to call it. What I do with that is a lot of people just ignore that. I don't. I respond and say, look, I really appreciate you contacting me. I don't have anything for you at the moment. However, I do have this. And then I'll send them the brochure for We Leadership or Next Gen Sales or something like that. And so I do it as a reverse, because they've initiated the contact. So I'll send back something saying, here's my services. Can I help you? Some people don't return the call after that, but other people, we develop a relationship.
Yeah, I had a guy do that to me, which was hilarious. We used to get a lot of business from cold emailing. We used to send like a few hundred emails a week. And one guy came back and he goes, looks like you need my help more than I need yours. And I was like, you bastard, you know, which I would have accepted if he'd said it in a nicer way. I thought he had a very, I didn't like his tone, but I accept that I need lots of help from lots of people. Hence, I mean, we all do, right? Hence why I love to have people on my podcast just to sneakily get free coaching from experts like yourself there, Damien, under the guise of creating content for you. It's genius. What a hustle. Just
what you said was a really critical thing to say. I kept going then because I wanted to get this point across. But you highlighted a really, really important point. That person, as you said, that came back to you, as you said, if they had been nice about it, you probably would have engaged with them. And I love my pop culture references, and I'm a child of the 80s. One of my favorite movies was Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze. Now, he's a bouncer who beats the crap out of people, but he talks about being nice. And that's a really, really important thing to do is have that attitude or separate behaviors. When someone, it doesn't matter, even if they come across as, you know, just approach it from the perspective that they've got good intentions and react nicely. And if you do that, you might create this relationship that wouldn't have been there had you reacted in an aggressive way. So always be nice, as to your point there. As if he had approached it in a nice way, in a bit of a humble way, and say, look, you know, and maybe made a bit of a joke about it, and then get you to laugh at yourself at, you know, something, pointed out something that might have been ridiculous, and just gone, hey, you know, this is a bit silly, and then you create that rapport. And that's one of the critical things that when people ask me all the time, how do you create rapport? What's an easy way to create rapport? And I've got coming out this week, and well, it'll be after this goes to air, but talking about the one key principle to create rapport, and that's show interest in other people. You know that if anyone in a relationship, any guy that's in a relationship, or girl, depending on which way you swing, but if you're in a relationship with a lady or a feminine type, and you actually show interest and say, hey, honey, how was your day? And when she's talking to you, and you can do this whether in a relationship or business relationship, repeat the last few words that they say. They'll say, oh, you know, and this happened, and then we're at the fire station and the fire truck come out. Oh, the fire truck come out. And they will keep talking. But what you're doing is you're creating a connection with them, a bond with them. You're creating a relationship where you're actually listening. And that's where, if you want to create rapport with people, coming back to your point about being nice, if you respond in a way that asks a question and shows interest in what you're doing, you'll create this wonderful relationship. And then from there, that's where a lot of sales come from. A lot of sales that I've got for myself and for clients was just ringing up and inquiring about their day, about their life. Normally after Christmas or New Year's, I'll call up and just inquire about, you know, how was your Christmas, New Year's? I've got so many sales out of that just by calling up and inquiring. I never didn't have the intention of asking for sale and didn't. They offered it.
It's a tale as old as time. When you get into that personal development space for the first time, and you read books like How to Win Friends and Influence People, those simple principles at the beginning that most people don't think about, like taking the time to learn someone's name. I came on your show and you were really well researched. You knew some stuff about me before I got there. You showed up on time, put some effort in, and asked a lot of questions. I think that's really, really great, as long as it's used authentically. And I'll tell you that I used to work in restaurants, right? And people love being friends with a waiter in a restaurant because then you kind of got an in, you know? And you could always smell the people who were doing it just to try and get some free shit, because what they would do is they'd learn that my name was Alex. And the whole time through the meal, every time they'd talk to me, they'd say, oh, so where are you from, Alex? Excuse me, Alex, we get a menu, please, Alex. And, oh, excellent. Thank you, Alex. And they just use my name too many times. Like, they had these fake people skills and you can just sniff it out. They're just looking for a free dessert or something like that. And I think that definitely everything's practice, right? Everything is experience. A sales conversation that you're having today will probably be a lot easier and more relaxed than one you had 20 years ago. Same with me. And I think that if we had to take one lesson away from it, that I have learned is huge. And ironically, I say in a very long sentence, saying less in a sales conversation is really, really hugely powerful.
100%.
100%.
Yeah. You said so.
Nailed it. Nailed it. I had your business partner in Next Gen Sales, Peter, on the podcast a few weeks ago. And then off the back of that, I went into his office and he was talking to me about his system of sales and conversations. And he was doing it by asking questions. And as he explained the process, I realized he was doing it to me. And I started laughing about 3 points into his 6-step system. Because I was like, you are selling this to me right now, Peter. He's like, no, I'm collaborating with you. I'm having a collaborative conversation with you, Alex. And it was hilarious, man, to realize someone's selling to you, but to love it, love the fact that they're doing it is really quite a skill. So I'm sure you guys are going to be changing some lives with that system for sure.
Well, from that perspective too, Alex, when you look at that and look at that process, at the end of the day, if you're there selling someone, there is that negative connotation that people have that you're trying to get something out of them. But if you're actually approaching it from that genuine perspective, if you want to help them, you've got a service, a product that can help them. And all it is you're just sharing with them, this is how this can help you. This is how this can better your life. Then it becomes a very smooth conversation as you experienced. It's not about here's my wonderful product and you know, here are all the widgets and features and they make it really, really wonderful. And it's about me and tell me about me and listen to me and this is how great it is, blah, blah, blah. If you're there going, hey, look, Alex, you know, I understand you've got this problem with marketing and you're having trouble reaching people and you're sending out all these emails and you're getting not so much response from them. Have you considered approaching it from this way where you actually might get a bit more response? Would that be of interest to you? And then all of a sudden that process becomes, again, more about collaboration, about more understanding what that problem is. And also to having the integrity, if there's not a fit, you say, look, I understand, Alex, this doesn't work. We're in different markets. But if we do have a point of collaboration in the future, it'd be wonderful to work together. And by the way, if do you know of anyone that might be of get value out of what we've got here? And then you throw in the referral, and you're asking for a referral, which is really important. But that's a very, very key thing to do is have that discussion, be interested in them and what their problem is, and then you're not selling.
Well, I'm very interested in you, Damien, and you've got a wonderful story, and I'm well aware that I've kept you a little longer than I promised today because of our technical issues in the middle there. But I will say that Damien Andrews has been with us today, and DamienAndrews.com is a very good follow on LinkedIn if you can go into that hellhole of a platform. But also, he's got a fantastic podcast, Growing Revenue and Profits, and everything that Damien's up to since we've met has been really, really cool. Incredible content, and you're a really, really fun guy to listen to. I wish we could do another hour together, mate, but I'm really, really honored to have you on the show today. Great story, wonderful stuff. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Alex. Really, really enjoyed the conversation that we've had. And love to have a follow-up at some point if that fits within your schedule. More than happy to continue the conversation.
Of course. Yeah, we love returning guests because in doing this chat, we open up more wormholes that we love to do. But I understand that I am not yet Joe Rogan with an audience of people who will listen to me for 3 hours. So I try and make it concise and just, you know, have you back instead another time. I would listen to you for 3 hours, Damien Andrews, but if I had to listen to myself for 3 hours, goodness me, there would have to be some whiskey involved. Mate, it's been amazing. It's been amazing. And I wish you continued success in your life and business because you're a truly lovely, lovely fella. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Anyone listening to the recording, hopefully it is smoother than the live stream that we've been trying to do today, but we love you for that nonetheless. I'll be back next week with just one episode of Coaches to the Moon. Next week is my daughter's 3rd birthday, and I'm taking them to the zoo on the day when I normally record my podcast. So family first, podcasting second. Thank you so much for listening to Coaches to the Moon. Until then, see you later. Much love and peace out.
Coaches to the Moon will be back next week. Until then, reach us on Facebook at To The Moon Digital Marketing.